Hey, Agility Addicts, before we drop into our episode, I wanted to take a quick second here to mention Cody's Creations, one of our fabulous sponsors. Cody's Creations, or Carrie Beck, the creator of Cody's Creations, is a local collar maker out of Massachusetts, but she is nationally recognized and ships nationally. My collars that my dogs wear at Agility Trials have received lots of compliments, and I just wanted to share where I got them from. And as you know, Michelle and I, not only are we huge fans of Cody's Creations, but we don't have a lot of pennies to rub together. Cody's Creations creates custom-designed collars, leashes, and harnesses without breaking the bank. I can't tell you how amazing her products are, and I highly recommend that you go check her website out. It's CodysCreations.com. That will take you right to her Etsy page. Check out her products. You can also email her and ask her for any specifics. I have over 25 products from Cody's Creations. Michelle, probably more. She has a few more dogs than me. And they're just fabulous. She does biothane. She does nylon leashes, customized leather. It's just incredible. So really check her out. Little bow ties if you've got a pregnancy announcement or just want to make your dog look cute, treat totes, you name it, she's got it. So check her out. She supports us. We want you guys to support her. And best of all, you can do so by getting 15% off by using the code STARTLINE at CodysCreations.com. And now I'd like to welcome you to our next episode. Thanks so much.
Are you ready?
Steady. Welcome to Startline.
Every journey is different, but they all start with the start line.
We're here to edutain you about the world of dog agility. The sport has changed rapidly in just the few years we have been a part of it.
Join us as we discuss our journeys, share our successes, laughs, and failures.
We will be joined by special guests, and our hope is for you to help us grow the sport we love. Episode 24, go!
Hey guys, it's Michelle.
And Kara.
And today we are continuing on our judges interview series with Oksana Serkin. So welcome, Oksana. Why don't you start us off with telling us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been in agility, what got you started with agility, what you're competing with?
Hello, guys. Once again, my name is Oksana. I started agility in 2008. At that time, I had two dogs. I had the Rhodesian Ridgeback, Alyssa, and a Corgi Tara. And I was walking in a local park, and it was Wheeling Bull Lakes, New Jersey, and they have a competition. And I was just shocked that the dogs would just do whatever the owner asked them to do without treats or being off leash. I like, what is in the world? How do they do that? So yes, I was hooked, and I remember myself asking people like, can our dogs play? And everybody looking at me like, what are you talking about? We're not used to play. Now I know all the inside, but that was a green novice A. Even before that, handlers that have no idea what's going on, how they do that. So I jump into training with some New Jersey, one of my first teachers was Janet Budzinski, I believe. Susan Binfleet. So I start training my dogs, and because they've been older, like about 3 years old at the time, so I progress relatively quickly, and we start competing like in 6 months or so.
Oh wow! Now you don't sound like you're from New Jersey.
Yeah, originally from Russia. I'm here with my family for 30 years. So it's a long time. I just will have my accent. I guess it's never go away. But it is what it is. So I'll try the best that you understand what I'm saying. And after a couple years of competing, I thought of judging, and I get my license in 2014.
Yep. Awesome.
Yeah, I first showed under you, I believe, was it in, it was either in Canine Country or in Rhode Island.
Yeah, I think my first time was Rhode Island.
And you stood out to me because you were fun. You would also do things like you really judge, and this is important for me, contacts. You actively judge contacts, which scares me and is also wonderful because I needed that extra pressure because I struggled, as many people know, for a long time with my contacts. And so there's one thing to go under judges that may or may not be as diligent, but I appreciated the diligence because I knew if I ran a run and I got my dog in the contact under Oksana, I did it. I felt like I accomplished something.
And I truly believe that come with a global judging experience. I went under Greg Derrett and Lee Gibson with a program, Global Judging Experience. It was a great, I believe it was a 2-day seminar that they show us a lot of videos that we answer questions and like they absolutely explain it to us. So they will play the video, you will watch, and then they play the video in a slow motion and you will miss the contact. So and he explained it, that's why it's important to be relatively close and to, yes, get lower. Like you need to see. And the people who train, the really train those running contacts, I want to pay them back. I know how hard it is to maintain the running contacts.
Oh yeah.
If they deserve it. If but to see it, I even say it's impossible to see with the human eyes. Like only like you know the story in USDA Sina Sports, they took actually away the winning prize because the running contact was judging incorrectly. I think it's impossible to see with the human eyes. Like a true running contacts, like it's really hard. So I do everything I could in my power to be and watch and be able to notice the little thing on a yellow when it's running contact.
Yeah, but it's super helpful because then it makes me really focus on my training and things that I do. For example, at Invitationals with Walter, I did not decel. I did not give him the criteria that I ask to get into the contact. I was rushing, I was nervous, and I just blew right down. I was like, he'll get it, he'll get it. And he didn't. And it was 100% my fault. And so when I know that I'm under a judge, that I just was nerves and a wreck. But when I know there's a judge that particularly focuses on them, I'm more, it causes me
Relax.
to be a, well, no, it actually causes me to be a better handler and be more focused on my contact. So thank you for that because you bring that out. But you're also fun, you're fun too because that's challenging and scary for me. But I really enjoy showing under you because your courses are delightful.
Yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah, and you have a way that you really bring that fun that you experienced. And I never would have guessed that you just were walking your dogs in a park and were like, oh, hey. I don't know. I guess I envision in my head that you grew up as like a 5-year-old running agility. And I don't know. I
Oh
just.
no, yeah, no sports involved. So I as a novice handler, I was really, really stressed out, and it took a long time to work, and take some online courses to work on your manage your mental skills to stop that, like put that aside, like because it's only way for you to do what you needed to do if you're stressed, if you're nervous.
Yeah, your laughter definitely breaks that. You definitely
Yeah.
have a
Oh yeah.
contagious laugh in the ring. It's fun.
Yeah, I love the way that you celebrate every part of the runs. I mean, it just I that's just the biggest thing for me that stands out. You're so happy. You just it could be an NQ run that maybe the handler thought just went absolutely disastrously, and you are just out there celebrating every part of it, and it helps so much.
Absolutely, the effort, the time you put into training, that you hear, that you're trying, that you, and I love to see when people still smiling when it's in queue. The trial is a test to your training, so that's all it is. So if you couldn't get some part of it, but remember the good part of your run, right? And be happy, and just be happy for your partner to be with you and running. As I am saying often at the briefing, you are healthy running agility. What else do you want? Be
Yep.
happy. Your goal is met. Just everything else is a secondary.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So what so you talked a little bit about what you had when you started with agility. What breeds are you currently competing with now?
Yep. So when I become a judge, and having a corgi, another corgi, I had a corgi, and then I bought another corgi because I like the breed is wonderful. The corgi can do all and above. And having a corgi and being relatively healthy and young, I can do anything. I can smoke while she's in a tunnel. So I needed like more challenge. I like, what are you guys struggling with? Like, why the 20 inches not queuing that often as every other height? Like, what is the problem? I need to know the inside of it. So I went, and I was afraid of border collies because I thought, no, it's too fast. No, I can't handle. And yeah, I get a very, very fast Australian Shepherd.
I'll say Archie's are he's
Yeah.
Just
Not
slow.
no tail, but he's no joke. So, but now I know everything what you struggle with. So yeah, I have a 20-incher, and that was a purpose of me as a judge, as a designer, to know your real struggle. Like, why? What's the problem? Like, why couldn't you get it? I don't know. So and yeah, and never forget Linda Kipp in New Mexico. She said to me, "Speed kills." So now when I do my courses like very fast, I do know like if I'm asking like I give you a big line, speedy line, if it is a collection coming up later, like you may be in trouble. So I am thinking from another perspective because I do know exactly what you're dealing with. So running in 20 incher and a fast dog really helps me to understand and design in on a way that trying to get you through.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely I run the same breed, but I run two different, well, three different dogs at three different heights. And just depending on how the dog lands and their speed. So Walter, my 24-inch dog, is not very fast, but he not an efficient jumper, so he jumps high, he arcs high and he lands far out. So I have to compensate for turns, you know, if we have to cue collection and all that. And then it's just fascinating. Then my 16-inch, she's a rocket for a boxer. And so it's fascinating to see the differences. But I find that people that have corgis, because I know Roger O'Sullivan ran Keebler for a while, you guys have a really good perspective. And Sherry Jefferson, you guys have a really good perspective because if you think about it, if you just made their legs a little bit longer, you have a big dog. But because their legs are shorter, they're just not physically as fast. So they're as drivey, they're as, you know, I'm sure, and please discuss this with us. You notice some similarities given that they're both herding breeds between your Corgi and your Australian Shepherd. But at the same time, it's almost like the Australian Shepherd can open up and get those arc jumps and get into the trouble that you weren't seeing when you were just running a Corgi.
Yeah, when I'm watching my video, sometimes he gets one stride between the jumps. Like, yeah, I'm in trouble. And the corgi, multiple. I didn't count her strides. I don't need to. I can do whatever I want with her running.
You can smoke a cigarette and
Yes,
have dinner.
yes. And she is well under time. Her time and standard is about 30 seconds under time.
Oh,
So she's
nice.
not slow, but still, the time she gets to the obstacle, I have time to do my maneuver.
What would you say inspired you to become a judge? We know kind of what inspired you to get into agility, but in 2014, what made you say, okay, I'm gonna go do this?
It's just something that I do. Like, if I really like it, I want to see inside out. I want to be involved. I want to be involved in a sport and stay in a sport. And I would be afraid even to think about it. But my very good friend at that time, friend, coach, teacher, and a mentor is Judy Colva.
Oh,
When
yeah.
she got her license, I thought for some reason, I don't know why, but for some reason, if Judy can do it, I can do it. This was my motto for years. I move now. We don't see each other that often, but Judy is a very good instructor, judge, person. Like, she was my inspiration to not to be afraid. Like, I won for maybe a couple years before. But I was like, can I really? The biggest issue for me was that briefing, the judge's briefing. Nobody understands what I'm saying. I'm opening my mouth, this public speaking, they're looking at me, and I'm losing all English I even have.
Yeah, my husband has that issue. He's from Northern Ireland, and he's speaking English, but he has an accent, and he says words differently. And my own family, my mother and sister turn to me, and they go, what did he say? I was like,
yep.
Speaking English. He's right in front of you. He understands you. Yeah, it's funny, but you are always good too. I remember you say about the table, if you can't hear me, hold up your hand to your ear.
Oh, sure. Yes.
Yeah, so you've always been accommodating that way, which we always appreciate.
Yeah. Yeah, so you are actively competing. How difficult do you find it to balance judging with competing with your own dogs right now?
It's very easy. It's very helpful. When I listen to Zach's interview, Zach must be a genius. I have no idea how can you not to compete and deliver a good courses. I don't know. I have the inside out story. I know. I have my blood and sweat and like I know what I'm dealing with. How can you just draw it on a paper and but Zach's deliver? He's not the only one. We have a couple judges who doesn't run a dog recently, but you are being like a really good judges in my eyes and in many people too. So, but for me, judging and competing is a nice balance. My dogs need a rest when they do nothing, absolutely nothing, on a couch, laying down and waiting for mama to return. And my husband work like 5 minutes from home, so he is home at lunchtime and lets them out. So this is a really great balance. And being when I judge, I get inspired by good training, by my own courses. I want to run this. I want to see if I can do that. And just a good when people compete and show the nice skills, I get really inspired. Like I really like this balance of judging and competing. This is a good combination.
That's super interesting because that's actually one of my fears. I've always said to myself, I'll wait until Debbie's retired and I don't have another dog coming up for a while. I thought I'd just do it in between dogs because I was so afraid to, I guess, that balance, you know, be able to reach that balance. But that's inspiring to know that you not only do it well, but you enjoy it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So speaking of judging and kind of reaching that balance, what would you say an average day is like, you know, from being on your feet to the prep to get there to the course design, kind of everything, you know, how you keep your attention watching 350 dogs, bending over and breaking your back to check those contacts. Just kind of walk us through what your process is.
Yeah. So the average mileage on a day of judging one ring is about 11 miles.
Oh, wow.
But this
That's like 25,000 steps.
I do walk every day 7, so 11 on a judging, that's not much difference. 7, I don't know what I'm doing, training my dog, I guess, but 7 miles is my average daily. So this is not the issue. The issue is when you're standing, so I try not to stand. If you're judging standard, you're really involved. You need to be places. You need to see everything, so you walk a lot, so and I like that. On the jumpers, you can get a little bit, like there is sometimes the jumping course, like you don't want to be on the way. This is your approved pass and you should be right here. So it's a little, I prefer walking. I prefer to see, I prefer not to stand. And what else do you want to know? Like how is the day? It goes fast. You get, when you judging, you get re-energize with your energy, with your stories, with your success. So it's really very rewarding for me to do that. So I'm super happy to go places, to see people I miss, to see. And so this is all good. I can't say anything bad about it.
Well, is there anything you don't like maybe booking the hotels or staying in the hotels? Or one of the things I've always felt guilty about is I don't live near where we trial. I mean, 45 minutes is as close as I get. And a lot of times I chair and I'm not able to take the judge out for dinner. And I always feel, A, I missed that experience. And B, I feel terrible. But I'm like, here's a great place, here's, you know, gift certificate, please go here, but I can't be with you. Like, do you like be, because some people I know, after a long day of agility, I like to just come home, relax. Sometimes I'll walk my dogs just quickly. But do you, would you like to go out to dinner with the club? Do you want to just go back to your hotel and kind of relax? Like, what are some things you like or don't like about that process?
Right, so this is the very simple answer. Yes, I do like to go back to hotel room
That
because I give
makes
you
sense.
so much. Like I can't. I almost can't, I empty myself out. I need to just be quiet. The hotel room, the TV, just get back and be quiet. That's all I want at the end of the judging day. So again, is it somebody else may like something else, but this is me. And when the club gave me that chance to be by yourself, this is the best for me.
Yeah. No, and I get that. And that's why I
Yeah.
asked. I'm curious because as extroverted as I am and a people person, the reason why, and as much as I want to go out with the judges too, I'm also tired. I just
Yes,
want to
absolutely. Absolutely, exactly.
Yeah, 'cause you're just like mentally on all day at an
Yes,
agility trial.
I empty myself out. And as the story about the early day, the start early, this is good for me. I'm an early bird and I like wake up and in 5 minutes I'm functioning pretty well. And when we have the fast class, first class of the day, this is great because it's a dynamic class. I love it. So I have no issue with early days, the fast and the first class, like this all good. Everything, it's just all good for me.
Yeah, Debbie, my dog definitely loves fast first. That's
Yeah.
one of her favorite things. So, speaking of dynamic and fun things, we've been dealing with a dynamic thing since March, but how have you found judging and even competing? Feel free to discuss any of that during the pandemic, because we've certainly discussed our challenges on the podcast, and I'd love to hear, you know, kind of your
Yeah.
insight.
Yeah, living in Florida, and I live in an area where we see more cows than people. So, I don't know, I just watch on TV some horror stories, and I know I have some people that getting hit with it. So it's true, it's all real, I understand. Again, in Florida, we have the trials, mostly all of them outside. So we all masks. When we just start go back to trials, we not only we separate the excellent master from novice and open, we also separate the heights.
Yeah.
So it's about like 15, 20 people on the site at one time, and they leave it. We run excellent master jumpers, excellent master standard, small dogs. They leave. Then the excellent master big dogs, and then they leave, and then the novice open. So the day goes longer. We all masked, we start with gloves and keeps the distance. So far so good. Like everyone can have a not a good experience. It can happen. It's real, I understand. And I did travel a couple times. I tried to not to, but I was asked to come to, let's say, Ohio. I could not find the replacement, so I traveled to Ohio. So far so good. I can say you know everything about it, like other than separating classes and designing courses that nested like different ways. That's all we do now in COVID time. We try to keep distance and try to move trial and be cautious about not to be too close to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been really creative with that here. We're doing something very similar. We were just in a building that could only have 20 people in it. So they split the days by height and then actually did double trials. And then
Yes,
novice and
yes.
open come at the very, very end and they're told when to
Right.
come. And yeah,
Right.
I mean, it's a challenge, but we're working through it and we do rely on the judges to be amenable. And I know that, you know, getting kind of into course design, that's different from what you've been doing. And so, kind of talk us through that. How, you know, what's your process for course designing, and has a pandemic really affected that, or it's just like, oh, okay, I just do this order now, you know, for nesting and everything.
About nesting, I know what course builders will say, but it's important to nest, and especially in pandemic, like I was judge designing courses for UKI, and even like Laura Barrett, they not thinking about nesting before, but now in a COVID, even the UKI folks are saying, "Hello, it's got to be nested because like nobody want to touch this jump like two times." So I understand. So nesting is important, but also important to give you a different experience on a different level, like. Again, I know some judges just changed, like take the jump out, and it will be excellent to open my rep. And it's Lisa Dempsey. She always trying to give the people the new experience. If you're running the Dokken Excellent and Master, if you're running the other Dokken Open, you should have a different course. And it's a great challenge to be nested but have a different flow. I agree with Lisa on that. So nesting is important, but try to be nested, but give the different flow. That's my goal. Also is now AKC allowed to have a bigger spacing, like 22, 23 between the jumps. And when you designing a course, if you have your, like there is an, of courses needs to be on it, like it's they call options. So, but still, if you have the space, like in Florida, we have 100 by 100 almost everywhere. So try to put bigger space. And again, having a 20 inchers that definitely needs that. I'm thinking about if I can possibly, like there is no 18 in between the obstacles, just not exist for me. It's not working. So 22, 23, like bigger spacing. Also, not to repeat the challenges. If I give you serpentine on this course, you will probably not to see on another course. Like I hate when I the classes are changing, but there is the same. Like they only change. Like take the cedar away and put two more jumps. No, I would like to be more creative and give you a different challenge every course you run. And talking about the courses, like having a corgi who needs motivation work and having a really fast, very driven dog, that you need to understand that two different courses will be working for those different dogs. So what I try to do, different style of the courses. So this like Friday will be good for my corgi, but Saturday is good for Archie. And I don't know if you feel what I'm saying. Archie need more collection. Then I can drive him better. Corgi need the free line, like a speedy highway lines, because this is what she can run, and I can run with her. I don't want to run with Archie. I will be way behind, and then I couldn't do that complex part of a course. So that's what I'm saying. Different type of dogs will require a different style of courses, and what I'm trying to give you this on a different days because I cannot combine this in one course.
No, that makes total sense. And I know what you're saying about collection. Like Debbie and I actually tended to do better in premieres because we would run in collection. And so we had more connection to each other. Where my nervous girl does better if we just have loopy long lines and she can run and not be confused about collecting and doing a backside. Backsides for her are very stressful. So.
And one more thing, competing in a different organization. I compete in USDA and UKI, and competing and running the Master Challenge courses and biathlon for years really helped me with premier. So my premier courses are better than regular
Yep,
because
I would agree with that.
they don't need to be, they don't need to have nine of courses. They don't. They only required five of like options, five of courses, and only minimum four challenges. One of them can be 270, another distance, and a third one a serpentine. So that's leave you only one real challenge, like a treadle. Only one real challenge on the course. I would love to run this course myself.
So, speaking of other organizations, are you a judge for any other organizations?
Yes, and I was judging the US Open in 2016, and I am really thankful for Greg
Oh.
Darrett and Laura to invite me as a very young AKC judge to judge that big event. So that was a great experience for me, and I really, really like that, and I feel really proud that AKC brought me up to this point that I can be really good in UKI too.
That's awesome. Well,
Yeah, that's
really
awesome.
quickly, I just want to take a quick break so we can hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Hey, Agility Addicts. I have a really cool sponsor to tell you guys about that I actually went after. Walter recently got his mock. Well, I know, surprising. And I wanted to celebrate it with his fan club. And so I wanted to bring something special. And we all know mock cakes are kind of off the table right now. They're not very COVID friendly. So I wanted something such as cookies, which could be individually wrapped. I checked with a bunch of local bakeries. They were booked way out. It wasn't an, you know, or they were prices that I was found a little pricey. So I looked online, and even though they're local to me, I found a really cool company called Wicked Good Cookies. Now in New England, wicked means very or super. And they live up to their name. They have $5 flat rate shipping nationwide. So whether you live in Tacoma, Washington, or Sarasota Springs, Florida, you can get these cookies for $5. If you live locally or you're at a trial I'm going to, I'm happy to pick them up for you. They'll give you some extra cookies. But they've also done us a deal because I explained to him all about, agility and how we celebrate and mock cakes and how we need cookies instead and COVID safe. And for 15% off using the discount code STARTLINE, Wicked Good Cookies is honoring our discount, which is super cool. So please go check out wickedgoodcookies.com. You can also get them if you're local to New England through DoorDash, Grubhub. They're just in Boylston, Mass. 15% off your order. They can put anything you want on picture-wise. These are great for kids going back to school. It's also wonderful for weddings, birthdays. You can't be there, you can send a box of cookies. But more specific to agility for your championships or even just a great title or just, hey, let's make agility fun again. Check out Wicked Good Cookies and use a discount code STARTLINE to save 15% today. And we're back.
Awesome. Yeah, I love to hear you talk about keeping in mind the different types of dogs, like the dogs that need motivation, the dogs that need a little bit more collection. I love that you factor all of them into your course design throughout the weekend, and also that you can nest and still create that different challenge. Because like you said, it's, you don't want to run the same exact course minus one jump.
I don't.
I love that you said that. That's amazing. So, have you ever run into any venues or anything that you find difficult to build around? So maybe like poles.
Yeah, and again, hearing the Zach interview, like, he's a genius. Poles are very difficult to design.
I thought
Be
that didn't make sense.
yeah,
Because I was like,
because. Yeah, like we have a poles building here in Florida, and I tried two times to run my dog there. I'm running him on a distance, so I'm running into this pole. Like no judges design a course for me, for my special needs running dog on a distance, but then I can't really compete there. So it is difficult to run and to design. Good building. And maybe if I would train there, I get more experience, but I don't. I train
Yeah.
on the backyard. I have no poles. So yeah, that's my limitation, my personal. So and again, some judges may feel differently. So just I'm really happy for them, but for me it is a challenge. And the bigger the course is, the more freedom you have. You don't need too much. Again, I just ran myself the UKI Cup, and the courses were huge, like three times yardage that AKC does. I was
Wow.
that body on Saturday. I thought I could move at all. So yeah, so there is a limitation, like physically for me and probably for the most of us. So we're not athletes. We just it's a hobby. It's not my job. So to run a dog like on a competitive manner. So this is the big course, but like 100 by 100 is good enough. So the bigger you have, you then you have to be ready for it. You have to take your own classes to get physically ready to run those European courses.
Yeah, I love that you guys get to run 100 by 100 most of the time. That's, I think we get to run on something like that, what, maybe twice or three times a year or something?
Yeah, if we're lucky, but we lost Rhode Island. Yes. We lost a lot of venues up here because of the pandemic. So we're really grateful, but stuck kind of in a, you know, 76 by 100. So where it's right. narrow and it poses challenges for some judges. Some judges figure it out very well. And then recently this past weekend, we were in a, I believe it's 90 by 90,
but there's four poles.
There's four poles and it's a little bit awkward and it's different flooring. So it's definitely a challenge. I noticed this weekend it was Zach and we had a lovely course and towards the end it was a wrap and there was a pole against this. So it was three jumps. It was one jump involved in the wrap, but it was jump, you know, wrap the jump and then take another jump and then you have your exit jump. And they were sort of in a line, but they were cocked out a little bit because of a pole. And I walked my judge's path or my dog's path, and I noticed that the pole really caused disconnection. And if you disconnect and wrapped a certain way, the dog was going to land and see the wrong hole of the tunnel. And so, sorry, ended in a tunnel. So long story short, because of the pole, I changed my handling path, which worked, and I saw the dog before me. I was so sorry for her, but a Portuguese water dog do exactly what I predicted because of the pole. So they pose a challenge not only for building and designing, but definitely for handling. That is a, you know, usually they're at least 12, you know, 12 inches by 12, they're foot by foot. That's a solid chunk of disconnect. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely find it hard.
That's what you just said. It's a very good judge need to do this. When you design your courses, you need to see those weakest area. Like as a judge, if you come to judge and you something surprise you on your own course, you need to get a little better at what you're doing. Like you, if you know the challenges, this is what you need to be doing. And if you miss a challenge, still educate yourself on it. Like just like remember and try to do better. What you just said, to know what the problem and how to work it through, that as a designer I need to know that too. And I hope Zach knows, he just testing you.
Well, I'm sure he probably knew, and that because the way that the jumps were offset, it didn't look like, oh, there's a pole, I've got to do this. I think it was an actual challenge, because when you come to a wrap, you have two ways to wrap it. That's always exists. And so, you know, some people get hung up on lead change. But I literally walked that line. And when the dog's coming around, they see, because of the pole, the wrong hole of the tunnel. So it was fascinating to watch that go down as I expected. And I felt like I actually had to overhandle, because I had to run into the pocket, get in a front, do a wrap to another front. And I don't, you know, Debbie doesn't like all that collection. She's more like your corgi. She's a Mustang. She wants to run big loopy loopies. So she was like, ugh. And I think she probably even did a sneeze for all I know. But I got the cue. And that's what I was going for. And I handled it aptly for my team. So, yeah, I'm sure Zach probably thought of that. And it didn't capture a lot of people. So, I mean, it didn't snag them up. But it did catch somebody in my height class that I was like, that could definitely be an issue. But speaking of, so Zach got feedback on that course either by watching the Qs or NQs. How do you handle the feedback from your courses? Obviously from watching, but do you like people to say, you know, great course, or what were you thinking on that one? I mean, what do you appreciate from exhibitors other than watching them?
Usually people don't say anything when it's not good, and they do say a lot when it's good. It's also very territorial, like going, being able to travel. I see a difference between the states. The less you have trials, the more appreciative people are. Mm. So some states, when we have a trials every week, people are expected a lot. They've seen a lot. They probably, some of them knows the rules better than the judges do. So they're not that appreciative just because of that, because this is what they do. This is like, it's a lot of what they do. And when you travel, like I would never forget to travel to Virginia Beach. And it feels like a national holiday. That's Agility Weekend. That's how important for that community it was. Like because they have like about four trials per year. So it was
Wow.
good to be part of a national holiday.
That's funny. The you know, longtime agility folks always say that to us. You have no idea how lucky you are. Our agility season ran from April to November. We were outside. We ran in the pouring rain and the mud, and they'll whip out pictures of them running through like 3 foot puddles and, you know, in jeans and old tennis shoes. It is interesting, and we are very lucky here in the Northeast. Particularly Michelle and I live, you know, pretty much an hour from Connecticut, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, you know, closer to certain things. So we are lucky. And I know in Pennsylvania, they have, Laura Kuderbach was talking about a lot of the competition there. They have tons of trials. But, you know, you go further out, even in California right now, where the camp trial. And I think there's something to be said about appreciation. I think that's important too about breaks. You said that you use judging to take breaks for your own dogs. Michelle right now is on a winter break. I'm actually planning to come up with a break for myself. And, you know, it's just, I think it's important to really not lose respect and understanding for the privilege that we have to do agility and that we've been able to do it during the pandemic. And so I appreciate that you stated that as you travel, one of the things you notice is people, you
and
know.
Simple happiness. People lose happiness.
Agreed.
It's more like work. It's more like work for some states. It's like check, stand up, check, jumpers, check, like done, done, move on. So there's no happiness. It's missing.
Michelle,
it's huge.
That's something Michelle and I have always been, not to toot our own horn, good about. I'll never forget. So we were playing around. Arlene was there. It was Jack Caudal. So it was one of our trials. I think it was Wachusett. And Michelle and I were running each other's dogs. We were just having fun.
Yeah.
And I think that's missing a lot. I'm not from New England, and I don't mean to poo-poo New England people, but they are a little bit colder on the outside and not as warm and fuzzy. I grew up in Maryland, and they're all about laughs and giggles and plays and be nice and... And New England's a little bit more standoffish, which I get living here because I've now become that way and I appreciate it. But to an extent, we do agility for fun. We should be lighthearted for our dogs. We should be lighthearted. Some of my good friends I've met at agility, and I've become involved in their lives. And, you know, when we lose a dog, we rally around each other. When we get a muck, we rally around each other.
Yeah.
And COVID's definitely dampened that. It's definitely put a squash on it. But I'm glad that you said that because it is really important. It shouldn't just be, okay, and some clubs and some trials have that feeling. Yep, we're done. Okay, novice workers, do it.
Yes.
Done. Here's
yes.
your money.
Yes.
It's not like
that's, as
fun.
A judge, I feel that. I feel that energy. I'm either really happy, see you lighthearted, or I'm really struggle to keep my positivity if I'm in a work environment. Like it's all really strictly like I need a cue. Like, did you run clean? What was your time? Two questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, the two worst questions.
Yeah, all right. Or you come out and they're like, did you call that? Did they call that part? Did this happen? Did that happen?
Oh, I'm super guilty of that. I was guilty this weekend. I've been in a double Q dry spell. Debbie and I hit a little blip, and 100% me. I shouldn't say Debbie and I. I hit a blip, and I wasn't communicating because I was running the other dogs, and I just have a lot going on. And so this weekend I was back, and I found myself in the previously I was like, did I cue? Did I cue? Now I didn't care because we were in our groove. I wasn't thinking about that. I wasn't like, did she call that? Because there was nothing, or he, there wasn't anything questionable. We legit, you know, but the only problem I still struggle with in the pandemic is I came out of one run and not a single, not even one clap because there were so few people in the building that no, and I was like, did we, I don't care, but I think we queued. I ran like we queued, but did we queue? Because I have no idea. So I think, but I get it. It's just, as you said in the beginning of this podcast, it's agility is such a mindset and it's so important for people to be in the right mindset, and not just for you, most importantly for your dog, because all that crap travels right down the leash, and even if they're off leash, it goes right to the dog, and you're just emotional dumping on this poor being that's like, I'm here for cookies.
Yes.
And so, you know, Michelle and I always say this, the ribbons are our cookies, but we don't always get them, and we walk out with some of the best NQs ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
So. Some of my best runs with Riley, my fast drivey dog, are NQs.
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I went through a spell of, I mean, I've talked about it on the podcast, dropped bars with my boy Sirius. If I started worrying about that, I was making it happen. And he, I mean, he can, I swear he can just read my mind. But it's amazing. I mean, he can just pick up on anything. And it's a good lesson for me to just get back into the right mindset of, let's do this for fun, let's be confident, let's be happy. So.
Yep, I caused a weave pole issue for a year, all out of mental instability from me. If I worried about the weaves, she popped the weaves. If I didn't worry about the weaves, she did the weaves. Simple. All right, so just so we're so grateful for your time. We don't want to take too much more. We just have a couple more questions. But this is one of my favorite questions. What are some things you wish the exhibitors or clubs knew from a judge's perspective? Gifts, what's expected. We talked about dinners and meals, but what if you could just take everybody? I know in the briefing you have the opportunity, although we don't really have briefings now. If you could just take everybody by the shoulders and shake them and just say, I wish you knew this, what would that be?
Yeah, when I heard this saying, the people saying, and I may not be necessarily judge at this day, but when I hear, like I'm a competitor, and I hear people saying, I would like to see the judge run this course. Like we may have physical difficulties, like disabilities, like the judge not necessarily need to run this course. And again, I would love the judge to be thoughtful, to know what the problem area are, what the challenges are, but not necessarily. Like I think it's unfair to ask a judge to run like any course, and then expect to be a good course with a different type of dogs. That as we talk, like today, it may be not your course, but this is today. And as a competitor, if I see something unsafe, I would talk to a judge and would ask to let's see, the straight contacts is like a must, absolutely must. I have a dog that would not think about twice. He will just give 100% and must be safe for him. So I would talk to a judge, and if a judge would refuse to change a pass or change the contact approach, I have the choice not to run this course, but this is it. Or maybe train the start line, but this is it. I like if the people would blame the judge or talk negative, this is not cannot be done. You have the choice to not to run a course which is not safe for you, or ask the judge to change a contact. This is what I do as a competitor, and I would listen and I would ask your opinion, please. Like we have when I brief, we have judges, we have instructors. Please, if you see anything unsafe, let me know. We can fix it before we run the dogs. We would not be fixing it later. Like in Alaska, one guy came, it was small to tall, and a guy came and said, oh, this is dog walk. My dog lands right there, and it would be unsafe for my dog. And it was like middle of the day. I said, where have you been? Like in the morning. And the guy is running two dogs. One is average speed, and another is just like my Aussie. So, and like there is not too many courses good for my Aussie because they land in where nobody lands. Look, unfortunately, you have a choice not to run. That's it. I would not change a course midday for you and for your fast
So
dog.
that just conjured up another question. Do trials in Alaska fill?
I was fortunate enough to go there. One of the best experiences. Like again, I want to say thank you to Noreen to send me to Bermuda, and Alaska was another place that we really like it. It's a different experience. It's a different planet. If you have not been there, you have to go. And they feel we yeah, it was a good day. It was not 300 rounds, of course, but they have a lot of people, and they travel about 6 to 8 hours to
Yeah,
trial.
I was gonna say,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah,
I've been to
yes.
Alaska and it was one of my most memorable experiences.
Yes.
And it's amazing, but I just didn't think the population density would be able to hold a big trial. But in a way, even though, okay, you're not making as much, but who cares? You got to go to Alaska.
Yeah. And Bermuda was the small trial. Yeah. That was two trials a day, and it was about 20 people with dogs, like, in the island total. Like, but that small trial. Alaska was good enough size.
Yeah. Yes. But I want to go back really quickly and compliment you on something you said that I think really hits home. I think exhibitors have a little bit of an unfair and too much expectation on the judge for the course to always be built for them. And I really love your perspective that someday the course is going to be built for your Corgi and some days it's going to be built for your Aussie. And I love that because I really experienced it that this the weekend. Zach was a judge, wonderful courses, but I was really glad. I actually wanted to run Walter on the courses that Debbie ran because Debbie was a 16-inch. She was on a different day, double trial, totally different courses. And I looked at the course and I said, oh, these would have done better for Walter in particular. I didn't have a choice. It's the way that the you know, cards fell. But I really think that's an important perspective to keep in mind that, and it's not necessarily the judge. And I always give judges 2 to 3 opportunities. I'll judge it. I don't just judge under them one weekend. I'm like, oh, never again. I always give them other opportunities because it could be the venue. It could be that style of course for my dog that day. I just think this is very important to keep in mind. There's so many factors. But if you do notice a pattern and it doesn't work well for you and your team, you have the option to not enter under them.
Absolutely.
But I think that's I really like that point that you made that, you know, not every course is going to be built for your dog and some you're going to enjoy other more than others. It's not just, and I've noticed that among judges that I absolutely adore their courses. Sometimes I'm like, oh, that wasn't a good one for us.
Right.
And
right.
That's an us thing. It's not a you thing. So I just really appreciated that comment.
And again, if I have a chance, I want to say to everybody who listens that it hurts me to see you struggle. Like, I heard again, like, the judge smiled when he raised a hand. I don't know about other judges, but I have to raise my hand. And if I have, I'm not doing it with pleasure. This is what I do. I'm just a messenger at this moment. Like, this is what you cause it, and this is what I'm showing. It is hurts me. Like, it was Oklahoma. January, the moth season, half of the class pop out of the weaves. I was like, I can't take another dog who will pop out of the weaves. Like, please, please complete the weaves. But what can I do? They said moth season. We didn't train for 4 months. Like, now people come up after pandemic, like, probably will be like a low cure rate. One more thing. I'm don't judge a course by the cure rate. Do not. Again, like Oklahoma, mud season, like they and the people been happy. It was a good, really good, a very friendly trial, fun trial. It just, like, it can be that there's just some circumstances that's why it's happened, and it's not necessarily the course.
Yeah. Right. No, that such good points. Really such good points. Yeah, I
and
think
you can see when you're judging, like, if you have to raise your hand or something, you can see that you're like, oh, I really.
You know what?
Don't
I'm gonna try. I'm gonna dig through my videos and post some videos of Oksana judging us because you're lively, you're animated, and you do show, like, you're sad to be like, to put your hand up, and we appreciate that. I have to admit, I've never seen a judge smile. You know, I'm sure that some accidentally have, but they don't generally look happy to call it. I think, you know, and judges want to have a good cue, right? They want to have their challenges met and they want to see, you know, the traps, but I have no idea it seems to be a thing at this venue that we trial at, but the weave poles, it was a nice arced entry. I mean, the dogs had probably 20 feet to the weave poles and not, they were coming off a smooth turn. It was not challenging, but for some reason, when these weed poles are against this wall, which it's not a busy wall, it's just a wall, dogs have a problem. And I was scribing, and I turned to the timer, and I was like, see? Those weed poles, you've got to support their injury or send your dog in. There's something about them. And the only thing I could figure out, because I went and looked at them too, and I was like, what is going on? The static in the building was so bad that all the fur was sticking to the poles, like to the point where if I grabbed a pole and sloughed it off, I mean, it was like a whole dog would be like poof, in the air. And so maybe that's it. The dogs are going through. Can you imagine? Just some of them are eye level and they're getting hit with all these little dog hairs. So who knows what it is? But that wasn't the judge's problem. The judge set a very nice line to the weaves, but so many dogs were blowing the weaves.
That's what I said. Never judge a course by the curate. Please don't. Well, one more thing to say that nobody talking about is I'm a designer, I am a judge. There is an army of people working behind the scenes. This is our AKC reps. Like it's thank you for them. Thank you for like the nobody sees them, but every course in AKC is approved. There is something like being missed. They also human, but they trying to do their best. They get you back the course if they don't like it. They give you suggest. They constantly educate me, and I'm thankful to my rep, Lisa Dempsey, to being always here for me and being working and just like there is a AKC reps and it's a good about AKC agility. They're really hardworking people and they helping us judges.
That's really good to hear because, again, we don't see you guys course designing and spending all the hours, just like we don't see the review process where you have to get your courses into the reps and the reps have to review it and get back to you. And there is so much behind the scenes, regardless of just the trial chair and getting the trial to happen. So, yeah, I think the overarching theme here is just be more appreciative of A, being able to trial, B, the judge, C, the trial chair, kind of everything that you're able to. Yes, it's a game that we pay to play, but without these moving parts, there would be no sport. And I think it's a wonderful thing to focus on. And then kind of finally for our last thing to focus on, what would you say is your most memorable or rewarding experience being a judge?
We already talked about it. This is traveling, that travel to different places to see the different training. Like I would never forget one couple memorable things. I'm glad I saw those questions before and I was thinking about it. Like some handicapped person coming into the ring and like you start worrying like, oh my God, what did I do? Like how can she? And usually they have a very well-trained dogs and when this person is qualifying, I feel so proud of myself that I did a good job. I didn't put him like to position when he couldn't do anything. So I'm really proud if it's a good design and even person with limitations can manage through. In Tennessee one time it was a lady running a border collie and the dog stopped on two off at the dog walk and the lady slightly moved and the dog moved with her and it was like this is it like this is how I expect you like not up for my expectations. She took the dogs in her hand and left. I would never forget this. So you inspiring me with a good run handling like this is how I should be doing. This is like what it's all about. Not the cue. Trial like you train. Don't lower your expectations. And believe me. And believe me. Year later, I would come and that dog would get everything. Like when you expect them to do what you want, you can see the dog progressing very nicely. And if you see the person struggling with the start line, doing nothing about it, year later, it goes nowhere. So I learn from you. Like, thank you for all of you to teach us judges how to run your dogs, how to train, or how to not, what not to do. Because like I have a chance to view whatever happening from a really good place. Like I've seen everything. Like it's a really good experience for me, rewarding experience to just be in the middle of the ring and just you sharing your stories with me, and I'm appreciative of that.
I love that. Yeah, we're sharing our relationship. I mean,
Yes.
my favorite, I love being social at trials. I miss all of that, but my favorite moment is being in the ring. And I have a saying that it's about the time that you had in the ring that matters the most and not, you know, all the hubbub and everything getting there. It's just the moment that you have with your dog. And theoretically, you're like a third teammate. You're technically judging us and you're judging our connection, you're judging our training, you're judging all the years and months of effort that went into that 30-second run.
I feel every emotion that you feel at that moment. So I'm getting rich by your experience.
That's lovely.
This has been, I think, so you're our third judge so far that we have interviewed, and I feel so inspired.
Right? Like, some of the sayings, you empty yourself. You're tired at the end of the day because you empty yourself for us.
Yes.
And
yes.
Just, you're there on our journey. And just, I love all of that. And, this is one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on. And I just want to get a quick little side note. You were a big inspiration during the start of the pandemic because you were out there challenging us. You were doing physical exercises yourself. You were doing trick training with your dog. You were out in your backyard doing things. You were involved in everything you possibly could that was online. And you really inspired us to, because I hit a slump. I'm not going to lie. I was like, ho hum. I enjoyed hikes with my dogs, but you added some inspirational structure, which I really appreciated. So thank you for that, because, the pandemic was tough and you were fun. You let us into your home.
Thank you.
You tried to do human exercises. Your dogs interrupted. It was adorable. Then you showed us the tricks.
I still do. I'm still on it.
So you've been an inspiration to us. I can't wait until you can make it back up here again. I hope the vaccine gets to us safely and quickly to all those that need it first. And I hope that we get to get Oksana back up in New England. Otherwise, I hope I can travel soon and get down to you.
Yeah. New Hampshire, in Maine, New Hampshire. I am in the New Hampshire, that office they have, the building.
Yeah, the American Canine. Yep, yes, American Canine Country, yep.
Hopefully, finger crossed.
Yep.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. And again, thank you for all who help us to. I mentioned a lot of names, and I'm really, really appreciative for all those people who get me where I am. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Agility Addicts, please rate, review, subscribe, and support. Your support helps us keep being able to bring you these episodes that we hope you're loving. So our judges series is going to continue on, but we'd love to get your support. You can do this by going to anchor.fm/startlinepod. You can help us out there. You can also just download, rate, subscribe, give us all of that love that way. But any help would be greatly appreciated. Thanks so much. Keep listening.